Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
We also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Yeah. And we are here today to talk about the new Netflix original movie, Gerald's Game. This movie, directed by Mike Flanagan. Based off of the novel by Stephen King, it stars Carla Gugino and Bruce Greenwood. It's gonna be an interesting conversation, I feel. This is quite an interesting film. It's the third Stephen King film to come out this year.
I think the fourth comes out this week too. 1922.
Oh my god, that's right. And then yeah. What was it? Was it last year that the James Franco TV series?
I think it was last year or like right before last year. Yeah. So, oh.
That was
I heard that wasn't bad.
And well, and then we also have The Mist. We have a couple of other television adaptations. Jesus, I can't talk about
adaptations.
Adaptations coming up soon. This is a very if it wasn't John Denver's year, then it would be Stephen King's.
This is very true. We're gonna talk about Gerald's Game, and it's gonna be awesome. As you could tell from my song choice, I assume that most of our time is going to be spent talking about the end of this movie. So that's fun. Before we get into all that, let me remind you, Stage Show Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show. Email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. Give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. And of course, give to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow and give us some money, love. Pour some sugar on us so that we are able to continue creating great content. And hell, maybe if we get enough, I can afford a better computer. Because I love this old bird. She's done well by me, but she is over 10 years old, and I get scared every time that there is a new OS update, and I just don't know how much longer she's going to hang in there. So that is becoming a real concern for me. Luckily, she seems to be running fine on High Sierra for the time being.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm scared, guys. If ever there comes a week where we don't have a guest, just know it's probably because my computer died. finally went into the earth. Also, we are brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema, giving you a fantastic selection of film favorites from all corners of the earth, all budgetary levels, great movies that you've heard of, and hidden gems that you may not have even known existed. Michael Snydell, you finally watched 13 Zemetti.
Yeah, and in the fog this morning before it goes away. Brian, 13 Zemetti is a movie that I like the idea of and didn't particularly enjoy. Sorry.
You monster. I think I said it on the show before, but I watched it with my wife and she was very taken with it. So Bill Graham, you might have to take a look at 13 Zemetti. It's a very short movie, so it's not going to break your time limit.
How short are we talking?
It's like 87 minutes or something.
Hour and 28 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
Free trial of movie so that you can see 13 Zemetti for yourself and let us know what you think. What you think of it. All you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage and you can get a free 30-day trial to understand the wonder that is Mubi. mubi.com/filmstage. Stuff that we should address before we get into our review. I don't think we talked about the fact that Harry Dean Stanton passed away.
No, we did not.
No. And today, sad news, Tom Petty has also passed away.
Who actually, I keep getting told
actually,
has...
Well, no. Hold on. He hasn't yet.
Go ahead.
Really? Because on the radio I heard that he had.
So the LAPD put out a release that basically said that confirmed his death. And then they shortly, like an hour or so later, basically said, no, he's just off of light support. He's still very much technically alive. There is no confirmed reports. So
well, we're not going to get into kind the of legal a, definition yeah. of alive or not. We don't need a Terry Schiavo situation on our hands. But
I do believe that that same report that then corrected it also said that he would potentially not live past the day, though.
Correct. Yeah. So by the time you hear this, hopefully there's some other information out there. But, you know, that's obviously something that we're all dealing with.
Sure.
In addition to the in no way pop culture related, but still extremely tragic news of what happened in Las Vegas this morning / last night, depending on what coast you're on.
Yeah.
So it's a day. And yeah. It's one of those things where like I woke up this morning and I just said to myself, like, dear God, why couldn't we have recorded this yesterday? Because it feels so trite to go back to talking about a movie on a day like today. But what else are we gonna do?
At the same time.
Go ahead, Michael.
At the same time, though, I mean, if serve as, you know, if someone's not doing great or, you know, is trying to find that source of peace, you know, whether they know someone or whether, you know, just the general thing, if our podcast can offer like any type of comfort, then, you know, I mean, that's good. Like, we don't ever want to minimize, you know, people wanting to go to movies. Like, for instance, me, I put on like an animated movie this afternoon because I'm like, I just need to get actually try to do something other
than just stare at Twitter,
read about these things. Yes, exactly.
So ladies and gentlemen at home, don't turn off your phone because you're probably listening to us on your phone, but set the phone down, glass down, you know, pour yourself a nice little finger of scotch. And just settle back and let the sonic tones of us talking about Gerald's Game give you some measure of peace in a fucked up, crazy, intense, nonsensical world. And on that note, let's get into it. This is Gerald's Game. It is the newest film from director Mike Flanagan. It is a Netflix original, so if you haven't seen it and you got Netflix, you can see it right now and then come back to us. And it stars Carla Gugino, who we may remember from Sucker Punch, and Bruce Greenwood, who you may remember from any movie where you said, oh man, Bruce Greenwood was in that, and he made it so much better.
Star Trek included.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's one of those guys who I see in a movie, and I'm like, oh shit, Bruce Greenwood. I just watched a movie that was one of those movies that no one ever talks about that I really like. Oh, it was Below.
I was about to
submarine
say,
one.
Isn't he in like Street Kings or something like that? Isn't he in one of those fucked up, crazy like Keanu Reeves movies or something?
Also in Flight.
Interesting.
And then wasn't he, in addition to being in Flight, also in not Captain Phillips, the other one?
Oh, the Tom Hanks one?
Yeah. The other one where Tom Hanks is a guy who saves everyone.
Sully.
Yeah. Was he in Sully?
Look at me! Look at me! I'm remembering shit. Guys.
Actually, looking at it now, I don't think he was in Sully, but he also had a good stint on Mad Men. He was in Below. This guy, he's, again, one of my favorite things in everything he's in, just because he's like Meek's a consummate character actor. And he was in Place Beyond the Pines. Anyway, so this is a movie that's stacked with underrated talent, and let's see what they brought to bear. Here is the trailer for Gerald's Game.
This is going to be good for us, Jess. Really good. That's a marriage, isn't it? Working on the difficult things.
For better or worse.
Let's go in. Get comfy. bet you think your husband will be back any minute.
Try to call for help. There's no one for miles.
Gerald?
I'm sorry, baby. You don't get to know my name.
I don't like this. I'm serious. Stop.
I don't like that. Thanks.
Stop it!
Are you playing?
Is this really what it takes these days?
God, how do we go so wrong?
All right, so that is the trailer for Gerald's Game. Here's an awkward thing that you can do on a lazy weekend. Watch this movie while your mother is over at your house. And the next morning, try to explain to her what this movie is about. That's what I got to do. I could only think that it would be more awkward if I'd watched it with her. So basically, Gerald's Game is about a married couple, Gerald and Jesse, and they go to the woods to a cabin on the lake, and they are trying to kind of rekindle the passion of their marriage, and the way that that has taken its form is that Gerald handcuffs his wife to the bed, arms spread out, hands to either post, with two sets of real metal handcuffs. And they're gonna do a little role play, light bondage, and that'd be fine if it weren't for the fact that Gerald has a fatal heart attack, and this leaves his wife tied to the bed with absolutely no one to help, especially not the feral dog that has found its way into the house. So, a bad situation made progressively worse. It goes some places. We learn some stuff. I was going to say we have a few laughs along the way, but to the best of my knowledge, there are not many of those in this movie. So, let's see what we all thought of Gerald's Game. We're going to play a little game that we play every once in a while. We're going to give I'm going to give us more than one word. You have 5 words to say whether or not someone should see this movie. Mike Snydell.
Okay, 5 words. Hold on, I gotta count.
Bill?
Sure, don't watch before you go to sleep with your girlfriend.
Don't watch before you go... That's way more than 5.
Not before bed?
Okay, not before bed works. Michael, have you worked out?
I'm good.
There?
Yeah, yes-ish, but the end is baffling.
Yeah, mine was going to be yes, but that ending, though.
Yeah.
So.
I don't disagree.
We're not going to give away the ending pre-spoilers. Don't worry about that. But there are some turns and twists and some very like basic level plot machinations that happen that I feel like some people may not want to know about before the movie begins.
I think structure-wise, even more so than a lot of other movies we talk about, it's nearly impossible to not make some larger call on the movie based on the rest of the movie other than the ending.
Yes.
like this is so specifically a single scenario that, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So we'll get into it. We're not going to spoil how it ends until the spoiler section, but just be aware that we're going to give away some stuff that some picky listeners may decide constitute spoilers. So, Michael Snydell, why don't you tell us, in more than 5 words, what you thought of Gerald's Game?
Yeah, sure. Gerald's Game is was something that was only kind of on my radar. You know, Mike Flanagan is someone whose name, I feel like he's kind of a part of this newer crop of indie horror directors who have kind of been given the cream of the crap in terms of sequels. The cream of the crap.
Hell
yeah.
So he was given the Ouija sequel last year. Ouija, I think Origin of Evil is what it was called. And I mean similar to Flanagan is kind of someone who, again, is still beneath the radar, but also reminds me of like the best craftsman of, horror craftsman of like the early 2000s. Like I can even think of, I think he kind of has the best of both worlds in terms of indie horror as well as kind of these crowd pleasing things. Like at times, Ouija, Origin of Evil, and his first film, Oculus, like, you know, kind of reminded me of how good Ty West, for instance, is at directing. But it also it didn't feel the need to, you know, I don't know, blue ball the audience. Sorry, this is a gross metaphor. My point being that Flanagan, my point being is that he's a director who now through a few different films has shown his ability to make the most out of very few resources. And I mean, as kind of discussed in literally the log line of this movie, this is a chamber thriller essentially between two different people, sort of. And so the fact that he is able to make that staging and direction mostly tense for a part of the runtime is a credit to him. Like, without getting into where he's going, he successfully keeps it within the headspace of Carlo Gugino's character, who, as much as Greenwood, I would say, is one of those actresses as well that just like continually just keeps getting short shrift. So it's really nice to see her get a lead role and see her really dig into something that is at times a one woman show. Now, with that said, if you've heard of Gerald's Game, you'll know that even the most diehard King fans are not a big fan of the book. So he is working with a source material that is thin to the bone, and it sometimes shows. But I think his creativity with a number of even just working with filters and some interesting ideas about the history of sexual abuse and stuff. I think that there is a lot of like smart, interesting subversions of genres that a lot of times become more about the actual subjugation than resiliency. And this is very much about that. And yeah, I can't really say more about what I think without spoilers, but this is a pretty decent movie and much better than it should be given the circumstances.
All right. Bill Graham, what about you?
Sure. I come at this from having seen Oculus at a midnight screening at South by Southwest. And all of a sudden, I was a really big fan of Mike Flanagan. And so I was very curious to see what he did from here. He's got his hands all over horror, whether he's writing, editing, or directing itself. Mike kind of already mentioned some of his other films. He also was, I believe, some principal behind Hush, which is one that we kind of had some issues with, but overall seemed to kind of enjoy. I think Flanagan, along with King, in a lot of ways, have really, really good ideas. And sometimes they kind of follow through and really kind of make those into something great. And sometimes they follow through and just kind of end up kind of, you know, spinning their wheels a little bit. But certainly, as the book, I think the nugget, the idea there, much like many of Stephen King's even big novels, but also his, you know, short stories, which are obviously well adapted into all sorts of great movies and films and stuff like that. He's an idea man. And, you know, just the simple setup of, you know, this couple having some marital issues, trying to spice things up. He takes a Viagra. He did not consult with his doctor beforehand. He definitely has a heart attack, and she's just left there, and you're just like, oh shit, that's not good. Like none of this situation is good. They're kind of, you know, they kind of fill in the ins and outs of it. And I won't go into too much detail there because it's kind of fun to see kind of how everything plays out, how little like resources she has at her disposal and how much they just kind of play that up. And, you know, it's a really good nugget. And I think the follow through here is pretty darn good considering Oculus. If you aren't aware of that movie, I'll give a quick little brief thing. It is about a haunted mirror. it is like that is the dumbest idea you can put to paper, right? Like pen to paper. There is a haunted mirror, right? And it makes people kill themselves. And you're just like, what the shit? Are you serious? Like, I'm about to sit down and watch a 2-hour movie about this. And then you watch it and you're like, wow, that's actually smart. Like, you know, it plays into a lot of the horror tropes and it does a lot of things that are really, really smart. So Oculus was a real big, like, kind of eye opener for me. And so this film definitely has a kind of that flair to it where it just keeps kind of building and building and kind of upending your expectations. I do agree that the end is kind of a swing and a miss. But overall, I think, man, this is like, if this is what happens with Netflix and their films, you know, we didn't really like Okja. But a lot of people really seem to like Okja. This one has kind of lit the horror kind of fans, you know, ablaze in many ways. And, you know, to have two good Stephen King adaptations in a single year within the span of nearly a month, I believe it just came out, what, 3-4 weeks ago? It's pretty incredible. Like, you know, we're flush with the Stephen King adaptations that happen to be good right now. So, bravo to this.
Okay. So here's a question.
Sure.
Let's say you're in a relationship with someone and it's going real good and everything's fine. And then one day you come home and they've murdered your dog and they burn down your house.
You only need to say murder my dog. I already hate this person.
In the end, would you say that was a good relationship? I would argue no. I would argue that the chaotic, horrible ending of that relationship negates and casts into a suspect light every good thing that came first. Such is how I have been wrestling with Gerald's game.
I understand, Brian.
A movie that for 95% of its runtime is a totally serviceable, well-acted, well-shot, like claustrophobic kind of B movie.
Yeah.
It does some interesting things. It's a little hammy here and there, but like all in all, a firmly, like, definitely gonna recommend this B movie. But then.
So it's a Stephen King book, is what you're saying.
Yeah. And this is, I have never read a Stephen King book, but I have seen many Stephen King adaptations. And I just am convinced that he, like, doesn't know how to end a novel. Like,
I can't remember if it was during it that you mentioned this or if this was somebody else, but yeah, there is a long running kind of joke that, you know, if it's a 900 page book, you rip the last 100 pages out and then you just stop. Like, yeah. just stop. Just stop there.
Cause what, like, I realized when I went home and looked up what it was, and again, no spoilers, sure, but like, I was gobsmacked to learn the truth of what Pennywise the Clown was. And it really feels like Stephen King is the type of guy who, like, can't not over-explain everything. He must put down every weird, dumb thought that he had in his head. But now the beautiful thing is that in a movie like The Shining by Stanley Kubrick, you have a vision and a visionary who are strong enough to say, fuck you, I'm not doing that.
Nah.
Even The Mist, the movie, not the TV show, which I haven't seen, but The Mist, you know, Frank Darabont legendarily said, like, I can't end this movie the way that it ends in the book, so I'm going to create an actual ending. And Stephen King said, well, that was better than the way I ended it, which is, like, at this point, kind of a no duh for me, because I don't know what the hell's going on here. And I'm still not going to say what it is. But I will say that it blunts, destroys, and otherwise, like, humiliates every character moment and good thing that came before it.
It's
this is the type of movie where, like, I can't even say, oh, like, the last scene's not great, but, like, the rest of it's fine anyway. It's the last couple of scenes truly destroy everything that came first. So, like, if you
I agree. Can
turn this movie off at the point where you and your heart feel like it's over, that's probably what you should do. Because I was like, oh, okay, credits. No,
there's kind of like a last scene. Like, there really is.
Yeah. But I was like, think we could. Okay, so this should be credits. And then instead it's like, oh, here we are. And like, we're going to do this thing. And I'm like, all right, I guess you got something else to say. I don't know
and
what, you know,
20 more minutes.
Like, thematically, you've made all your points. There's nothing else to say unless you want to just keep saying all those things over and over again and then introduce a fucking nonsensical, just insane other plot that we didn't even realize was happening. And it just gets to be too much. And like, at a certain point, before you even get to that final climactic scene, I had like checked out and revised my entire assessment of the film.
To me, this is kind of like having a movie about like climbing a mountain, like Kilimanjaro or something like that. And they climb up the mountain and it's this epic journey and they get all the way back down.
The helicopter shot.
Yeah. Well, no. It's not even that. Like they literally just like climb back down. Like no, not a helicopter. We're not going to take the escalator down. No. We're literally going to climb all, our ass back down. Okay, cool. And they get down to the bottom of the mountain and someone calls them and then it's like a 20-minute funeral and you're like, what? Like, for like one of the characters' moms, you're just like, what the fuck is going on in this movie right now? I thought this movie was about climbing a mountain and then it turns out it's about something completely different and you're just like, ah, what the fuck? So let me ask you this, Michael. You seem to be a little bit more familiar with the book than Brian, who's never read any of Stephen King's books, and me, who has read a couple but not this one. Is this that ending? Do you know?
I have not read it, but I've just seen. I don't even remember what I was reading, but I've definitely seen multiple lists that consider Gerald Games one of the worst Stephen King
books. But
it is the same ending. It is exactly the same as the book.
Yeah.
This motherfucker.
I looked it up.
There is one small difference, but I'll mention that in spoilers. It's not really relevant, but it is almost the same ending.
Yeah, because I looked it up because I was like, this has to be in the book. Because there's no way that any person who's writing a screenplay would decide to do this. And what's crazy is that it really does negate all the good work that Carla Gugino and Bruce Greenwood's abs put into this movie.
old is he?
I don't fucking know. He's an Adonis. He is a god in this movie.
61.
I am notoriously heterosexual, but Silver Fox jacked Bruce Greenwood. Holy crap, bro.
I've met him in person because I had to do interviews with him, and like, he holds a fucking room and his voice is just,
oh my god,
goodness.
Sonorous. He is like, he I imagine is how
this is
every
a thirsty
girl who
podcast,
ever,
guys.
Every girl who ever had a crush on like their best friend's dad, like now I get it because I'm like, yep. Oh, okay, yeah. If they're like Bruce Greenwood, I could totally see that. Like, that's how it is. Like, this guy is, and also like he wears them shorts. I'll say that much. But anyway, another like hauntingly good performance is that of Henry Thomas, who's in this movie, playing in flashback Jesse's father.
Mm-hmm.
And him and the little girl who plays younger Jesse, whose name is Chiara Aurelia, apparently.
Wow. Hopefully, sure, that's a hell of a name.
And I believe that I pronounced it correctly. So go me.
Good job.
And go her, because she gives a great performance. And Carla Gugino is great in everything that she is asked to do. She is great from her physicality to her kind of. Her like variable states of mind and whatnot. I mean, she's perfect in this, and so is Bruce Greenwood as everything that he is asked to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's just all the more annoying
sure.
that the movie there's a colloquial term out there called shitting the bed. This movie invites three other people to help it shit the bed.
Okay,
like,
Brian.
That's how badly it goes. Like, it's just, and I just imagine like everyone reading this script and like everyone setting up for these final shots. Cause like, I don't know if it was done in sequence or what, but like, I can't imagine everyone standing there and being like, so we've decided we're really going to film the last four pages, right? Like that's happening. Like, okay, I guess so. Why not? I kind of thought that we'd realize that it wasn't necessary.
As far as fucking Bruce Greenwood is concerned, he's like, this movie's fucking top notch, man. He's like, I'm out of here. Goodbye, set. You guys have fun. Y'all are going to wrap this shit up, right? It's going to be great. All right, cool. And then he probably watches it and he's like, I don't remember any of this shit. What the hell is happening right now?
Yo, so you're positing that this movie is like a Woody Allen film where you only got the pages that you were in.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, but so it really does for me come down to this question of like, how much does the end? Because like I remember not being really, really down with Fight Club until the end, when you kind of realize what the movie is doing, and so that made it an okay movie into a very good movie. And like, what people always say about an ending is it can make a bad movie tolerable, it can make a terrible movie good, and a good movie great. And I just feel like the opposite must be true, right? Because
a little bit. Because I think the interesting thing about a bad ending to something that you relatively enjoyed is it's more of a frustrating thing because you're just like, you know, y'all stumbled at the end, and if y'all had just walked, you know, you didn't have to run. But if you had just walked to the end, it would have been fine. But no, you tried to run and you stumbled over yourself and you crashed into a bunch of shit. And I don't think it ever negates unless it's this film that fucking like tweaks what you just experienced in a way that's just kind of like, for me, I'm forever going to have like a black spot where I just don't remember the end of this film. And I'm like, yeah, remember that movie about that girl that gets tied up and like her husband has a heart attack. And then she's, you know, she's got to deal with that shit. Yeah, that was good.
Well, it's like, you know, okay. So here's a well-known instance of this. Like a lot of people forget how Saving Private Ryan ends.
I don't remember.
The time lapse.
Yeah. Matt Damon turns into old man Matt Damon, and then he like breaks down crying and his family is there. Like, that's not a good ending of that movie, but the rest of the movie is so strong, and that ending doesn't fundamentally alter or take away anything that happened previously.
Yes.
And so you can kind of it becomes a lacuna in your memory. You know, time just eats a hole in the parchment between Tom Hanks's final words and then the credits, and so you don't think about it. But like this movie, what happens at the end so fundamentally casts a different light over everything else and so neatly hangs the window dressing on this that it's just it it does like retroactively infect even all of the other good things that happen. And it really is like, I can't in good conscience, like, tell people, yeah, it's a good movie, go see it. Because if they watch it all the way to the end, which you would hope someone would do in a movie, I feel like they would come at me and be like, dude, what the shit was the end of that movie you told me to see?
Yeah.
It's not even like it's a final line where, like, the grizzled cop and the victim, like, have a laugh. And it's just like, well, we didn't really need that. It's like a whole other sequence that does
okay.
other things. So
guys, I actually want to talk about it.
Okay, so yeah, let's...
Do we want to kind of touch a little bit on some of the other stuff that we actually... Fuck it.
I'll wrap up by saying that this is a movie that handles a lot of delicate information and situations very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be lauded for that. But there is something fundamentally broken about a movie that would end this way.
Yes. Agreed. Okay.
All right, so let's talk spoilers. Let's vamp a little bit, guys. How's your day going?
This is a good way to set up a scenario where I never enter in. That would be ever going out to a lake house in Alabama, A. B, ever leaving my door open. We're in spoilers now.
So we can talk about all that.
Holy shit, the door.
C would be ever going to the lake house in Alabama to go watch a total solar eclipse. Is that what that was?
They were in the path of totality that back path in the day. We've just been through a solar eclipse.
Are all these that fresh
in your mind?
I don't understand why this film is coming out now and not like right during the solar eclipse.
I don't know. Maybe it wasn't done yet.
Probably was. I don't know. It's weird that it just missed it by like a couple of months, right? Like that's a weird coincidence.
I mean, I guess. I mean, it's the solar eclipse is in the book.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so here's I thought we were going to get into this in the non-spoiler section, but so like she has like a mental break and starts hallucinating both herself and her dead husband.
Yes.
Like, as the various...
I didn't think we should mention it.
Yeah. No, I didn't think so either because I think that's part of the cleverness of the setup is such a good setup that you're just like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I'll sit down and see how this goes in the first 30 minutes. And you're like, oh, she's just going to, like, kind of talk to herself? Like, what's – and then, you know, they start to appear and you're like, ah, okay, here's how they vamp. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so – but I was gonna bring it up just because I wanted to talk about, in terms of performance, like, how good Greenwood is as a projection of her mind, and not just her mind, but like what she thinks her husband would actually be saying.
Sure.
Insofar as to like inhabit what he would or wouldn't know were he still alive, and also continuing to have that kind of patronizing attitude, but also her inner strength as herself and how well she plays off of herself and how very different her internality is from her external situation. So I was thinking about bringing it up in the non-spoiler section just so I could say more good things about the movie, but we decided not to do that. So that's interesting. It also involves a dog eating her husband, which is weird. And it also involves the Moonlight Man, who is a deathly specter who represents death, or is he a hitherto unknown serial murderer / grave robber?
Necrophile.
who collects noses and ears and talismans from the dead after loving them and graduates to murder, apparently. And it also suffers from some sort of a deformity of the face.
Giantism. Hands, it's, face, yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of those two. Like... this situation is crazy enough as it is that I really don't think we need to bring in an Edward Gein type figure with gigantism, but it's a Stephen King book, so why not? And well, why not why not never have anything mentioned about it until we have the heroine writing a letter to her younger self, who she then meets in her mindscape on a beach looking at the solar eclipse, and then says, I think we should see the sun again, or something along those lines. Again, like, just hanging a lampshade on it, like, oh, right, the eclipse is when the darkness entered her life, because her father is a creep who molested her. Like, that is a very bold symbolic choice, and you did it, and you really don't need to have the older woman looking at her younger self and say that line. And then you especially don't have to have her walk in to the courtroom and, like, push past everyone and then shout to the giant, who then turns around and breaks his own handcuffs very easily, because that's another symbolic thing. And he says to her what she said to him in the room. And then all she says is, what was it? Like, you look so much smaller than I remember.
Yes. Even and then walks away into the sunset.
Right, even though he is still 7 feet tall. But it's this all, is this it's is all a movie. Symbolism.
This is a movie where she was walking out of the courthouse and she kind of walks into the street, and I was like, "Oh, is this when she gets hit by the car? Is this what this is fucking going to turn into?" And no, she doesn't get hit by a car, but she definitely walks out into the middle of the fucking street without looking either direction. Just like, yep, all right, I'm going to put my sunglasses on and walk this direction. And you're just like, oh, okay, I guess.
It's such a, like, her bringing her younger self up to date on the, like, grave robbing dude that apparently, like, just dropped by a couple times to see when she would die because he preferred men to women but still wanted to steal shit from her. I don't even know, man. Like,
I don't even know what to fucking make of that, man. Like there must have been something that like happened in Stephen King's life around this time. I guess maybe some kind of real life. I mean, was this like the I don't know, the BK murders or some I don't even know.
This guy is
what the fuck? Is this guy real?
I listened to a podcast called Last Podcast on the Left. Uh-huh. It's really funny. You should check it out. It's about true crime, cults, and aliens and other paranormal stuff. And this guy is definitely more of an Ed Gein. You know, Ed Gein would go and, like, take things from the dead, and this guy appears to be like that. Like,
is this guy real?
No.
Or is he just, like, a wholly, like, fictitious creation of Stephen fucking King? And you're just like, why?
He's a wholly fictitious creation of Stephen King.
Ah, Jesus.
Like, that's what I'm saying is, like, What part of your storytelling brain was like, oh, what if he was real, and what if she goes and sees him in the I can't even think of the word, the courthouse, and says that it, like, gives, like, a little like bon mot to be like, fuck you, giant, I'm alive, and then walks away.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yes, Michael, go ahead. Please.
I admittedly have been looking for some critics who have defended this, or at least tried to dig into it in any way they can. And while I don't necessarily agree with the people who have said this, there was one interesting interpretation that I wanted to bring up here that I don't necessarily agree with, but I wanted to discuss it. And that was Hazel Sills, who wrote a piece for I think Jezebel, and she was talking about it in relation to the rape revenge genre, like a genre that, even though it has a lot of good films, like, in a way is kind of going through. She described it as a version in the rape revenge genre, in the sense that, like, that ending is not about wanting to kill. You know, it's not about wanting to kill the perpetrators. The perpetrators have been in her life, her whole life. They're monsters that have existed, you know, whether it be her deceased husband or her father, or now this Ed Gein type character, the Moonlight Man. So I don't necessarily agree, but I think that some at least have interpreted that ending as a way to completely reorient how we think of people getting revenge and trying to find catharsis. And in that way, there is... Wait.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
And in that way, I somewhat see what they're doing. On the other hand, in no way can I condone taking 20 minutes of a movie that's barely an hour and a half to do so, and all of the clumsy storytelling techniques, as well as not only like adding another monster. Like it is at once like, I think what makes it more interesting than a lot of bad endings is it's, as you were saying, Brian, it's at once thematically bizarre in a way that almost invalidates some of the journey she went through earlier. It is also like pacing wise terrible.
Stephen King and M. Night Shyamalan need to just like have a get together and just talk about endings to movies, because this reminds me so much of The Village in a lot of ways that just kind of recontextualizes sure. everything that you've watched. And if you haven't watched The Village, please go do so, because I actually really enjoy that movie, even the ending and even what it ends up doing to the rest of the movie. But that movie is one of those classic examples of, if you reject the ending, you reject the entire film.
Yeah,
and
yeah, absolutely.
That kind of feels like this film in a lot of ways, where if you reject the ending, and you're not me, where you can just be happy with the fact that you watched 90 minutes of you know, solid entertainment, and then the last 10 minutes they really just fucking tumbled, and just be like, yeah, I'm just not gonna deal with that last 10 minutes. I'm just gonna wipe it from my memory and just move on like it never happened.
That's the weird thing though, Bill, is like, even as weird as the ending of
The Village
gets, It still never feels like it diverges as far as this movie does.
Because The Village, it is his classic kind of like change everything at the end and it recontextualizes stuff. And he's been dropping those hints throughout. You know, at some point, I think one of the villagers mentions 9/11 and stuff. I think they mentioned that at the end, actually. That's kind of a big spoiler. Oh, well, fuck it. He's been out for a long time. I don't know. Like, M. Night actually drops a lot of the hints throughout that movie, kind of leading you down a path. And so, you know, when it recontextualizes and reorients, you're like, oh, okay, I can see where you kind of left the breadcrumbs. But this film doesn't do any breadcrumbs, because we learn about the murderer in the last 10 minutes of the movie. And you're just like, really? Like, I didn't know that was a threat at all. It's almost as if this film was like, oh, hey, everything that she just had happened to her. Yeah, she was dreaming. Did you realize she was dreaming? Oh, you didn't realize she was dreaming? Yeah, she was dreaming. She was in a bed the whole time. She wasn't tied up at all. And you're just like, what?
I think the one other thing, too, is the fact that it's, you know, it's played in the similar. This is a bizarre reference I'm going to make, but in the same way as something like the ending of The Usual Suspects, or, you know, something where it's supposed to, like, the way that it is played seems to me that it is supposed to recontextualize the whole experience. But yeah, exactly as you're saying,
I think Flanagan's smart enough to realize that, yes, it does change everything that you just watched. I don't think he's dumb enough to just kind of bumble. Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing about it, is you're just and honest, I don't know, but Oculus does a good job at the end of like continuing on like a really solid like ending story. And you know, we all had really big issues with kind of the last few sequences of Hush, and so that's another film that just has a bunch of issues at the end where you're just like, really? Like,
Yeah.
Well, here's what I want to say, because Michael, you were talking about like how this is a subversion of the rape revenge thing.
But I want to mention that too.
That's not my. I'm not.
I know. It was said by someone else. But my statement back to that would be, he didn't do anything to her. he didn't help her. That's definitely true. But like he didn't. He doesn't even really function as like a good cipher for her to place her feelings onto, because he wasn't like gonna stop her from leaving the house. Like, he was probably deeply confused when she gave him her wedding ring. He's like, I just want to take more pieces of your husband. Like, it's really bizarre to me that like that would be the choice, especially because like they have no relationship. Like, he wasn't even there long enough to really register for me as a character. Like, and it's weird that like Bruce Greenwood in his ghostly state is like, oh, he's gonna wait for you to die and then he's gonna take your wedding ring and no one's gonna think about it. And I'm like, why are you saying this about this specter that she saw? Like, where is this coming from? Like, why aren't we spending more time talking about her shitty father or you like mistreating her? And then,
I mean, I very much saw it as like a relatively effective physical manifestation of those demons with her father. Like, exactly. To be fair, like that, I mean, that like it is pretty obviously that at first.
And like, even when she begins writing that letter and I'm like, okay, so she's still seeing visions of this guy, but like, I really don't feel like he was in the movie enough to be like an effective like manifestation of that. Like, his scene was, to me at least, felt very slight, to the point where I was like, why isn't he coming back? Like, what is happening? Like, why is this occurring at all? And then to find out that he was just some Ed Gein type who just happened to be out there, like, first of all, talk about shitty luck. Second of all, like, that is just too convenient. And I'm going to spoil sort of the end of Prisoners right now. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. So
I've seen that movie. I literally forgot the ending. I hate that movie.
I'm going to keep it as vague as possible. But like, what begins in that movie as a simple missing children thing quickly spirals outward to be much more. You always hear these things of like, this I'm moving away from Prisoners. This is thematically the same, but I'm not giving away any plot points. You always hear about like the house at the end of the lane and everything's fine until the day like a woman emerges with handcuffs around her hands and feet and she's screaming for help. And when the police come, it turns out that those people have had like a torture dungeon and have been picking up and murdering hitchhikers for 20 years. Yeah. And like, Prisoners is like that moment. It's the story of the person who goes missing that throws a light on this thing that you didn't even know was happening. And it's very interesting in that way. And now this movie does something similar, but because we have no emotional investment at all in this weird serial grave robber corpse defiler, there's like nothing to care about. And her victory over him in the end feels so small and petty compared to the way that she overcomes the defeatist voice of her husband who says, you can't get out, you're going to die. Like, her cutting her, we didn't even talk about this, her cutting herself and basically slobbing flesh from her hand to get out of her handcuffs, that was a greater and more harrowing victory than her just walking up to some guy who's getting arraigned, who's clearly mentally disturbed, and like putting him down like it's in like a line from her burn book that she's been like polishing.
Yeah, it's like an insult to him, and it's just like, really? Like, this
poor guy,
this mentally not poor guy, come on, Brian, but this like mentally handicapped dude is just like, like it's got no effect on him. Like, he's not going to register that insult. Like, he's not going to stir on that for the next 30 years that he's in prison. He's not going to remember her at all.
He's just sitting there in prison. It's like 20 years later, and he's like, why was she so mean to me? sometimes, like, you know, that thing that someone said to you in middle school that, like, still haunts you when you close your eyes sometimes? Like, that embarrassing moment where you thought you did something cool, and then the girl you liked says, like, why are you so lame? And then just walks away and her friends laugh. It's like that kind of thing. Then you'll never be free of that, and that brand will follow you into your adulthood and will motivate every choice you make from then on.
That sequence of the handcuff is just, like, top-notch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, execution of practical effects. I'm sure there was a little CGI involved in there, but I'm pretty sure a lot of that was practical, because just the way the skin kind of ripples and folds and
the sinews and the bone.
My stomach for that is pretty high, even though I've never, like, delved into, like, torture porn and stuff like that. Like, that's not something I do, but oh man, I was watching it with my girlfriend last night, and I started to just kind of, like, look away and just like, oh, I can't believe they're going through with this, because we've all seen the people escape. And I thought literally the worst part was her cutting her wrist.
Yeah, I legitimately thought that she was just trying to get enough blood to, like, slick it up real good.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, I was not prepared for her plan to result in, like, it's literally called degloving.
Yeah.
That is, like,
I looked it up, unfortunately.
When she got out of that handcuff, I thought she was just going to have bones. Like, I thought she was just going to, like, I thought there was going to be a sequence where she looks down at her hands and she moves it and she realizes she no longer has skin.
She's basically just the Terminator now.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, Jesus, please don't do that. And I think the result was actually maybe even worse in a lot of ways, because, Jesus.
Yeah.
What a hell of a sequence. Michael, you were trying to say something. I'm sorry.
We still didn't get to – I'm sorry, but I just cannot believe that he would leave the door completely open.
Well, I don't – I mean, was that his fault or hers? Like,
no, it's
both of theirs, because it's mainly hers, because it's kind of one of those situations where she's kind of being pulled along, and she's just like – she's like, should I keep the door? Fuck it. Like, and honestly, 9 times out of 10, what's going to happen? Nothing, right? You're out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's going to be coming by.
Is there? I mean, that's.
Yeah. I mean, but she also knows that dog is, like, kind of super skittish in a lot of ways.
Not for long.
And I guess not of big, giant, 3,000-pound red vehicles, you know. But yeah, like, otherwise a very kind of skittish dog. And so I'm sure she's just like, we're going to go mess around upstairs and I'll come back downstairs and hopefully remember and, you know, close the door. Like, I don't know.
It's definitely, I mean, my thing is, why even have to leave? Well, I guess because, I mean, but the windows are open. And it appears that it's a one-level windows, house.
No, yeah. I thought it was a two-story house.
Well, obviously we need to watch the movie again and take some notes. I mean, because my thing was, I'm looking at it, and I walking into this, was aware of the fact that the dog would eat her husband and become a threat to her. So I was like, I wonder how the dog gets in. Because it's not going to be something as stupid as someone leaving the door open, right? But it was. And I kept looking at the open windows, and I was like, the dog's going to jump in through the window, maybe.
Well, my thing was, did y'all definitely see a collar? Because I definitely saw a collar.
There was definitely a collar.
Okay.
But dogs eat people. I mean, if I were to die in my house, my dogs would eat me. And I'm fine with that. They've earned it.
Yeah, no. And, like,
they're good dogs. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, no, and they're not going to have any predilection of like, well, he's not going to feed me anymore, so I might as well eat him. Like, yeah. Whatever. But like, I don't know, like, why does the dog have a collar? Like, why leave that mystery out there?
There is apparently there is an explanation for that in the book.
What?
I looked it up, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. I'll try to look it up again, but like, there is a point in the book where, okay, yeah, here it is. Jesse also mentions what became of Prince, who is the dog who gnawed on Gerald, which is the cutest way to put it. Prince was shot and killed by the police. Initially, his owner had abandoned him in Maine and driven back to Massachusetts simply because he did not want to pay for the dog's license.
Which, talk about a Stephen King detail.
Yeah, which is like...
Hold on. Okay, so... This book doesn't take place in Alabama?
No, I think that the action was relocated for the movie.
Ah, interesting. Because King's like settings famously are all about being in Maine, because that's where he's from. And so I thought that was a curious detail that like, oh, this dog is way the fucking Maine and then makes his way out. Like, he's been hitchhiking all the way just trying to find that Kobe beef, baby. That's what he's searching for.
Yeah.
You guys want to hear one more fun thing about the Moonlight Man in the book?
Yeah, lay it on me.
The Moonlight Man is someone who Jesse first mistakes for the ghost of her long dead father, like very explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
But she begins to think of him as the space cowboy.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god, I forgot about that, because I remember that.
Also, there's two other characters who aren't in the movie. One is an old college friend, and one is her ex-psychiatrist. Which, as I understand...
That she has flashbacks of?
Or hallucinations.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
she has... And then apparently the letter in the book is written to Ruth Neary, who I think is her friend?
The college friend, yeah.
Yeah. But it is weird that they call the space cowboy... That's weird. Yeah. But that's a very Stephen King thing to do. Like, apparently in It, all the things that scared the kids were, like, classic monsters.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which I think is kind of cool, honestly.
The Wolf Man and I think the Mummy are some of them, so. Yeah.
I think the other thing, too, is I realize what the ending of this reminds me of is, structurally, it's a lot like the end of Stand By Me as well. In terms of last detour with these characters who you didn't expect to get, like, I hadn't thought about this in relation to a lot of Stephen King, you know, books, besides for the, you know, the endless jokes about how he can't end something. Right. It is weird how much this needs to underline its own themes. And I guess going back to Bill, you were asking whether this is the exact same in the book. The only difference, at least from what I can see, is that she does not confront the Moonlight Man. She goes to the hearing, but she doesn't, you know, she doesn't have her petty, I almost called it a bon mot, but it would have to be clever in some way to be a bon mot.
Yeah, I call it a bon mot just because it, I don't know. I think I was being mean. But yeah, she goes to the arraignment and... I don't know. He like sees her and does the thing, you know, he puts his arms out in the way she was in the handcuffs and repeats the Maid of Moonlight thing.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
It's weird. It's weird. I mean, so, but for Stand By Me, that whole movie is predicated on like, this is a memory inspired by learning that someone I knew died. And so like the ending where he explains what happens to each of them is talking about the way that people drift out of your life. And like the fact that a lot of the stories that he tells about them are more interesting than the story he told about them altogether is like a statement on a life. But like, we have nothing to hold on to with Raymond Andrew Jobert, the space cowboy, the Moonlight Man. It's just so weird. And like I said, I can't do it. I can't get behind it.
Yeah.
It's... Also, their last name is Burlingame.
Yeah.
Which,
really?
Come on.
Really? That's their name?
I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, but it's B-U-R-L-I-N game.
Oh, jeez.
So Gerald's Berlin game. I don't know. It is weird to see Henry Thomas playing like an old creep.
Mm-hmm.
Who is he normally?
He was the Elliot from E.T.
Yeah.
What?
He was in Flanagan's last movie, too.
He was also in Gangs of New York. He's the Irish guy who betrays Leonardo DiCaprio. He's the one that tried
Elliot?
To help you.
That's Elliot?
Yeah.
Oh.
His name is Valen.
He grew up to be a pervert?
Well, in this movie, I don't know that we can... I don't know that we can talk about...
That's so sad.
To be a pervert.
The just the delivery.
Oh, man. Elliot grew up to be a pervert? Man, the kid from fucking The Sixth Sense got, like, fat and weird? Oh, man.
He's pretty funny on Silicon Valley.
Yeah, he's hilarious. I like him on Silicon Valley.
Wait, who?
The kid from The Shining.
Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, okay.
Not Henry Thomas.
I was like the pervert on Silicon Valley?
Stop calling Henry Thomas the pervert.
Sorry, Henry Thomas.
Poor fucking guy. So yeah, but that was weird. I think that the way also that was the whole way that situation played out was, I don't want to say novel, but it's an interesting way to look at, like, the way that even someone who's not being physically assaulted, it can be emotionally and mentally assaulted in the same way.
Yes.
I think that was a very interesting way to show that. And
I just want to say the Moonlight Man is actually Carl Stricken from
Twin Peaks.
He's Twin Peaks. He's the fireman. Or the giant.
The giant. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Do we have anything else to say about this movie?
Oh, the last thing is I really thought this was going to go. I'm not going to spoil this in case anybody hasn't seen The Descent, but I'm just going to say when she's in the car and it crashes, I really thought this was going to become The Descent. That she was just going to be back in bed.
That would have been hilarious. I really thought it was going to end with her getting rescued. I like those people running over, and then she kind of passes out, and then I was like, oh, okay, great. That's a perfect way to end this movie.
Yep.
Nope.
Yep.
Nope. What a fucking crazy, crazy way to end this movie. All right, but that's it for today. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We hope that you have enjoyed this as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. Give us your money. Give us your money.
We're just not even pretending to be subtle about this.
I only ever put it that way at the end because I am at once tired and also almost certain that no one is listening anymore. Yeah, so patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. Give us your money. Go to Mubi and you can get a free 30-day trial of the coolest streaming platform available. They have, first of all, have I already talked about how Hulu updated their app and it's worse than ever now?
I can't imagine that.
It just check out Hulu's app. I mean, on my Roku TV and my Apple phone, I mean, it's just like, it's the worst. It's somehow worse than it used to be. It's impossible to find anything, and I hate it. But Roku, Mubi has a beautiful little app. And because of their limited selection, you always know you're going to find whatever you want. And it's beautiful. And it's great. And you should check it out. Don't forget that you can download the movies onto your phone or mobile device so you can watch them on the go if you are so inclined. All you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage. And you, too, can understand the wonder that is Mubi. So that is it for today. Next week, we're going to be talking about Blade Runner 2049. And then following that, we're going to be talking about Brawlin' Cell Block 99. And the Florida Project, and probably there's something else I can't remember. But
Una.
Una? Yeah, at some point we're going to talk about Una. We're getting to that point in the year where...
There's going to be so many movies.
There's going to be a shit ton of movies. It's going to be that last month of summer where we were doing two episodes a week and slowly going insane. So look forward to that. Anyway, gentlemen, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and the next time. Bill Graham.
Woo. You can find me searching out for that Kobe beef on Twitter at CableBFG.
It's actually from Kobe.
Yeah. Yeah, I found out that that's not actually a thing. It's from the Hyogo Prefecture, so I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Suck it, sexy Bruce Greenwood.
Yeah, I don't know. No, there is no location called Kobe. But anyways, and you can also find me talking about shit like that on the Slack channel. Boom.
So this just struck me. So you didn't look up anything about the source material, but you did look up where Kobe beef comes from?
Definitely. No, I literally looked this up during the podcast. I looked up Gerald's game, but I wasn't able to like browse it and like look that up. But Kobe beef, I was able to get my answer pretty quick.
Okay. Anyway, Michael Snydell.
You can find me staring at solar eclipses on Twitter at Snydell. The Chicago International Film Festival's coming out. A listener messaged me and asked him for some suggestions. And so if you guys want any suggestions or want to know what I'm going to go see, just message me on Slack or Twitter. And if you guys are going, say hello when it happens in like 2 weeks. So this is a little bit early, but
it's a good lead time.
Yeah, I'll be there.
All right. You can find me on my personal site, dearfilm.net. My Twitter is Brian J. Rowan, at Brian J. Rowan. And you can find me pretty much everywhere else. That same thing, because I am terrible at coming up with screen names. Even though this past week I came up with the best screen name ever. Iguanodon Draper. Right? And then I made a picture, which you can see on Twitter, where I photoshopped an iguanodon behind Don Draper's desk and had it say, "That's what the money's for."
Nice.
And I think that is super clever, but I got very little love for it on any form of social media. So mend my heart, follow me on Twitter, and like that tweet of Iguanodon Draper. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for enduring us. And we look forward to speaking to you next week.
You bet it always